Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Gray Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
No man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, no. Now the war is not over, victory isn't won, but we'll fight on to the finish, and then when it's all done, we'll cry glory, oh glory, oh.
Selma is now for every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win a war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, glory, oh, glory,
welcome to GLC. Saturday, April 3rd, 2021. Opening now.
Welcome to the GLC with Gary Norris Gray. You can call in at 646-727-3649. Thank you, Black Athlete Sports Network, for sponsoring the Great Leopard Code. And it is now in its 10th year. Send news to Gary and Gray at blackathlete.com or Norris19 at att.net. Giovanni's Produce Store, El Cerrito, California, 510-220. 1-800-235-1233 is one of the sponsors. Our new sponsor is Reality Sports Group in Reston, Virginia. Other sponsors are the New England Informer magazine, Restoring Wade, CEO, Boston, Massachusetts, Michael Lewis Ingram from BASN, and Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, Saturday afternoons and Wednesday nights on blogtalkradio.com. You can call 718-508-9216. That's 718-508-9216. Get your Canadian, Philadelphia, New York room on with the Soul Patrol. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. May my second radio home, WCLM 1450, with Sports Talk by Cowboy Reggie and the Sports Talk crew. The little old mystery man on Saturday afternoon. He will make you smile, he'll make you laugh with music of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Listen to WCLM 1450 and WCLMRadioOnline.com. The heart and soul of Richmond, Virginia. Pat Freeman, the mighty Oba from WUFO 1080 Buffalo, New York. Young star Travis Singleton and his kids for grades in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. If your kids are getting A's in school, then contact Travis on Facebook.com. Listen to Brother Anthony Johnson on The Anthony Johnson Show on Saturday at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern Time. Political Fools for the Soul. Remembering Roland Rogers, CEO of BASN in New York City, and the family of BASN writers and broadcasters. Cannot forget the 707 and 609 for their support. Want to be a sponsor? Check in the Code Caravan email. You can email Gary and Ray at blackathletes.com or north19@att.net. Join the Code Caravan, the Soul Patrol, Ad Nation, WCLM on facebook.com. Please visit our website, www.blackathlete.com, and get a different look at the sports world. You'll be surprised at what you find. Call the Gray Leopard Cove at 646-727-3649. That's 646-727-3649. Have a blessed day.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. America, enlarge its mind. Enlarge its mind. That night, President Donald J. Trump, I knew you were going to get this. But baseball being baseball, I knew you were going to do this. He is telling America to boycott Major League Baseball. Well, I was going to do that anyway. But not for the reason that he wanted to. Donald J. Trump is mad because he wanted to boycott baseball. Because Major League Baseball moved the All-Star game out of, again, the America is losing its mind. It's losing its mind. Listen to this.
What is your
what's the number?
I think it's probably a 7-ish. 6 to 7, probably 7.
See, we have ours, and I may get into trouble for
like
this. 2 o'clock. I have them to the attractiveness of women that I find to be attractive. So I will never go to a Serena Williams level, but I'm very comfortable with, I'm very comfortable at a Halle Berry level.
Okay.
I need a little bit of mulatto still coming through. It can't be,
is Gail King not in your realm?
No, Gail King is not even on my toaster level.
We have it now at toaster level. And Gail King is not it, neither is Serena Williams. I think are too far into the mean. Because this is allowed to happen on radio and TV. The guy got fired, okay, fine. But to be allowed to say it is what I'm talking about. These guys know better. They know better. They do anyway. Because they can. This has got to stop. This has got to stop. I'm just really frustrated with America right now because they keep doing this. They keep doing this. Example.
Why are you arresting her? Can you sign the code? Why are y'all arresting her? Stop protesting the vote. Why are y'all arresting her? What did she do? What did she do? What did she do? Can y'all fight the code? What did she do? What did she do?
In case you missed it, here's what happened in the state of Georgia yesterday. State Rep. Park Cannon was arrested for, well, this.
There's no doubt there were many alarming issues with how the election was handled.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp.
It is a redux of Jim Crow in a suit and tie.
Who purged over thousands of votes to cheat his way into beating Stacey Abrams for governor, signed a bill into law that is nothing short of racist because the state saw record numbers in voting. In short, the future is worrisome for the GOP, so they acted to suppress minority voters.
You know the things with bundling and all of the things that are happening.
Through Donald Trump's great big lie that almost every single member of the GOP bought into.
Are you serious?
No, you are not. Represent.
She's not under arrest.
What for what? Under arrest for what?
This is all State Rep. Cannon did for Georgia state troopers to place her in handcuffs and book her in jail. This is the state of Georgia and the Republican Party in a nutshell, guys. But hey, if you're a member of the alt-right or right-wing militia, you can show up with guns and ammo, no questions asked, and have rose petals sprinkled for you on your way out. But if you're a black representative knocking on the door, well, that's a problem. The bill signed by Kemp's office does the following. Limits in-person voting ahead of Election Day. Limits absentee voting. Limits drop box locations. Requires additional layers of ID in order to cast a ballot. Which brings us to this guy, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred. You see, The Major League Baseball All-Star Game is set to take place in Atlanta, Georgia in July. Manfred joined the fray of positive PR spins for headlines when he said the right to vote is a pillar of American democracy, a privilege that we should all appreciate and exercise. I'm proud of our sport's role in encouraging baseball fans and communities throughout the country to perform their civic duty and actively participate in the voting process. In September, the league joined the Civic Alliance, a nonpartisan group of businesses pushing for higher voter turnout with, under this ironic slogan, we're 100% in for democracy. Dodger Stadium was used as a voting center in L.A. Nats Park in D.C. did the same. In Boston, Fenway Park was another used for American citizens to cast their ballots. Oakland Coliseum, where the A's play, was added to the list. Ditto for Camden Yards in Baltimore, Maryland. So if a league favors voting, taking all these steps to put out Manfred's quotes to the press and join various groups, they would disavow the state of Georgia for taking these actions. Right? Jackie Robinson is a man so revered in Major League Baseball that his jersey number is retired. The league contributes tons of dollars to his foundation and even has every ball player wear number 42 on Jackie Robinson Day. So Robinson once said, the right of every American to first-class citizenship is the most important issue of our time. If this is his legacy, why wouldn't Manfred continue it? It also wouldn't be the first time the sports industrial complex acted to penalize government officials and crooked politicians. In 1990, Arizona voters rejected a proposal to make Martin Luther King Jr. Day a state holiday. The NFL responded by moving the 93 Super Bowl from Tempe to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. Voters later approved the holiday, and the NFL awarded the 96th Super Bowl to Phoenix. In 2016, after North Carolina adopted a law that directed transgender individuals to use the bathroom corresponding to the gender of their birth certificate, the NBA branded the law as discriminatory, which it was. The league moved its 2017 All-Star Game from Charlotte to New Orleans. The law later was repealed, and the NBA awarded its 2019 All-Star Game to Charlotte. So to Rob Manfred, I simply say, batter up.
And with all the beatings, the county opinion passed the law before the state did. But the NFL still pulled the game out of Arizona. And they did that. Number two, now whenever these guys, the GOP right wing, get cornered, what do they do? They put out the Bible. They put out the book and start reciting chapter and verse. You think I'm kidding?
Shame, shame, shame. It was a Senate hearing on voter suppression. Republicans in 43 states have proposed more than 250 bills that would make voting more difficult.
It's one of the most despicable things I have seen in all my years.
One proposal in Georgia would ban any election activities on Sundays.
Outlaw voting on a day when African-American churches sponsor Get Out the Vote efforts. I'd like one of the Republican members on this committee to give us a plain sense justification for that restriction.
Mississippi Republican Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith.
You know, this is our currency. This is a dollar bill. This says, the United States of America, in God we trust. In God's word in Exodus 20:18, it says, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy.
Okay, we need to adhere to what's written on dollar bills and take the Bible literally? Hello, everybody. I'm David Schuster, and thanks for watching. Senator Hyde-Smith, you may like Exodus 20:18, but how about Exodus 35:2? Whoever does any work on the Sabbath is to be put to death. You want to cast the first stone at your Mississippi constituents who on the Lord's holy day pack Cracker Barrels, attend car races, and visit the Creation Museum? Yes, the Creation Museum is open on Sunday. How about Leviticus 19:27? Ye shall not round the corners of your heads, neither shalt thou mar the corners of thy beard. Senator, here you are with your good friend and fellow Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker. Have you ever lectured him against the clean shave? Leviticus 11:6-9, and the pig, though it has a divided hoof, does not chew the cud. It is unclean for you. You must not eat their meat or touch their carcasses. In other words, no pig skins, no football games at Ole Miss, and no bacon. Sorry, Senator. Too much Old Testament? Okay. Timothy 2:11, I permit no woman to teach or have authority over men. She is to keep silence. No more university speeches for you, Senator. Corinthians 11:5, every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered dishonoreth her head. From now on, Senator, at church you need to wear a hat. But maybe find a different one than that Confederate battle cap you wore a few years ago. Matthew 5:34, but I say to you, take no oath at all, neither by heaven, for it is the throne of God. Senator, this means no more taking an oath of office. You got it? Luke 14:33, so then none of you can be my disciple who does not give up all his own possessions. Senator, time for you to give up all your possessions. Have we had enough? Okay, one more. Matthew 5:42, give to those who ask and don't refuse those who wish to borrow from you. Senator, I am asking you for $10,000. You cannot refuse me or anybody else who now asks to borrow from you. This is silly, right? Well, Senator Hyde-Smith has a history of silliness and a record of outrageous remarks. On the campaign trail 3 years ago, she made this comment about a political supporter. Yes, she trivialized the history of lynching in the American South. Hyde-Smith then repeatedly refused to apologize before offering a partial apology during a debate. Then, in a conversation with young conservatives, she suggested suppressing the votes of liberals. Perhaps she was joking then about voter suppression, but then, or now, it is no laughing matter. This is our democracy we're talking about, and the right to vote is fundamental. The measure under Senate consideration is called the For the People Act. It would bar states from restricting the ability to vote by mail, and among other provisions, it would call for states to use independent redistricting commissions to create congressional district boundaries. Republicans say it would create an implementation nightmare. The nightmare, though, comes from the GOP, where it's now okay to suppress voters, wave dollar bills, and quote the Bible all at the same time. It is sheer lunacy. God help us all.
And that's where we are right now. That's where we are. Complete craziness. And last night was the continuation of this. Donald J. Trump wants you to boycott Major League Baseball because they're not a good sport anymore. They don't support the people anymore. Really? This is getting out of hand. It really is getting out of hand. Let me do this before we do that. We gotta do this first.
For almost two decades, the Black Athlete Sports Network has served as the definitive source for information about the black athlete. Whether it be historical or analytical, BASN has always celebrated the contributions of sport's most innovative and unique beings, the black athlete. In 2016, as we relaunch blackathlete.com, look for more of the same from our unique set of writers and historians. We have been and always will be the soul of sports. We are BASN.
We are BASN. Got that right. We always will be BASN. Ladies and gentlemen, there is also a trial going on in Minnesota where a police officer put his neck on a citizen for 8 minutes. Over 8 minutes. Yesterday, a sergeant or lieutenant of the department was asked, is this standard procedure? He said, no. Have you ever done this before? He said, no. Mr. Chauvin put his neck on the neck of Floyd George Floyd. George Floyd was pleading for his life. George Floyd died in that street corner. $20 bill. What are you doing? What are you doing, America? You're traumatizing Black America again. You don't care. That's the part that gets me. You don't care. Because if you did, that officer would have got fired immediately. He wasn't. What are you doing? I'm going to talk about it in 6 minutes. Don Lemon and Cornel West discussed the George Floyd case. Then Mr. West, and what he says about humanity, the humanity of the United States. Question, do we have any? I'm beginning to wonder. Don Lemon and Cornel West.
What is the trial saying about us as a country, especially when it comes to how we all see race?
No, it takes us to the most fundamental question that has always set at the center of not just America, but the 400 years that you and my ancestors have been here, which is, do we have the will to stay in contact with the rich humanity of Black people, to stay in contact with the beauty of Black people, the intelligence of Black people, the tenderness of Black people, the soulfulness of Black people? When you talk about Brother George Perry Floyd Jr., you're talking about a human being. You're talking about a precious son of George Perry Sr. and precious Larsenia Jones Floyd. You're talking about what it means actually to open yourself to get beyond the stereotypes and acknowledge that for the first nearly 100 years, America failed on that question. It didn't stay in contact with humanity of Black people. You enslaved us. You exploited us. You tortured us. You tried to barbarize us, and we responded with making your democracy better, with more love, more freedom, and more wounded healing. Then we came back for another 100 years of neo-slavery. We failed on that again. Looked like under Martin and Fannie Lou Hamer and others, we were making a breakthrough. Looked like under Brother Barack Obama, we're making some progress. Here comes the backlash again. So here we are in 2020 saying very much how you started this show, my brother. Do we have what it takes to really acknowledge the rich humanity of Black folks, to treat us fairly, to treat us like human beings? Because if not, you're going to lose your democracy. Mm. You're going under. You're going fascist. If it wasn't for Black voters, especially Black women voters, you would have gone fascist under the gangster named Trump. And keep in mind, though, and this is the good news now, because this is Easter week. You know, it was tomorrow they put my sweet Jesus on the cross. Roman Empire put him on the cross. We're going into that temple and running out those money changers, and that temple was a huge place, hundreds of troops. But what we heard from our vanilla sister, Courtney, was what? I stayed in contact with the rich humanity of Brother George. I knew he was a tender man. I knew he was a soulful man. I knew he was a kind man. I knew he was a human being, faults and foibles, like all of us, no matter what color or gender or sexual orientation. But thank God we've got some acknowledgement of it. Will the police be able to do it?
Okay.
Well, if the police can't do it, then, you know, we better do it ourselves.
Okay.
I'll tell you this, too. Now, let me just add this one thing, though, brother.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I thought about Brother George, and I thought about my brother, and I thought about my father. I thought of my grandfather. I'm not going to stand there for no 9 minutes and 29 seconds and watch somebody murder my father. No, 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 no. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about pacifism, and I believe in nonviolence, but I'm not going to watch that kind of murder. I love my brother Charles McMillan. That's why he was crying. That's what his tears were about. He felt helpless. We're not going to do that. Some of us Black folk, some of us Black men, we're not going to stand there.
We're going to have to intervene in some way. They ain't going to kill us like that, and we remain spectators. Because somewhere I read, silence is not an option. I don't stand with the silence. That's the last two sentences of your letter to Drew, your letter to your nephew. But America needs to understand that, too. We got to self-respect. We got to self-defense. And we intervene when you start killing us like that. I'm sorry. We intervene out of love, brother. Out of deep love. Do it for my sake.
Let me ask you this. Because everybody I saw, everyone I saw on that video, and I asked this earlier, everyone I saw had some empathy, saw the humanity, felt the humanity, George Floyd, as you said, foibles and all. We're not thinking that when someone's laying on the pavement or in that situation, like what they've done wrong. We're thinking about when you're taking the life from a human being. Why is it that every single, when you said the police thing, everybody saw his humanity and felt it, except for the police officers who were there?
Because they've been getting away with it for decade after decade after decade. Even the good policemen, in the language of the mainstream, they remain silent. And they allow the gangsters in their ranks who've been mistreating folk. And keep in mind, you know, brother, it's not just black folk who've been treated like this. You got some white brothers and sisters being treated like this. But we get 3 times. We get 36% of all of them. We only 12.8% of the population. You see what I mean? So we're concerned about everybody. We're not confined to just the chocolate side, but I'll be damned if we're not going to start with the chocolate side of town with our blacks, our brown, and indigenous folk, and our Asians. And it is in the name of love, but love sometimes can get real tough. Love is protect, respect, and correct. And we're not going to stand there and just be victims. No. Mm-hmm. No, that's not Shiloh Baptist Church. That's not the West Ham. That's not Glen Elder, brother. That's not Curtis Mayfield. That's not Gladys Knight in the Pip. We come out swinging.
You know I went to Shiloh.
If it ain't got that swing, he wasn't just talking about notes.
You know I went to Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church as a kid. That was my church. And you just called it out. Professor. I'm going to do like I do with my family members and the people I know. Let me let you go because I got to deal with some things, and you're making me cry here on the TV, and I got to compose myself. Thank you. I love you, brother. I appreciate it.
I love you, though, brother. You stay strong. Indeed.
Thank you. I'll see you soon. Be well.
The humanity of the United States. Where are we going, folks? What are we doing? I know this is more so, but this is more serious. Look. 4 years of hell. And y'all didn't learn that yet. 4 years of confusion. Y'all ain't learned that yet. 4 years of deceit, y'all ain't learned that yet. Go right back to your old self. And just think about this. One person on that jury, just one, can let Joe Biden walk. One person if this man did not get fined, a prison sentence or whatever, if he walks away from this, all hell is gonna break loose. I mean, all hell is going to break loose. I'm not joking when I say this. The world is watching. been watching. You gotta do the right thing now. You gotta do the right thing. It's on you. We'll take a break. Come back with sports. We'll come back with sports after this break. But y'all gotta think. Y'all gotta think.
Were you ever taught when you were young? If you mess with things selfishly, they're bound to come undone. I'm not the only one that's been affected and resented every story you've spun, and I'm a lucky one. Cause there are people worse off that have suffered enough. Haven't they suffered enough? But you can't get enough of shutting down systems for personal gain, fighting fires with liars and praying for rain. Do you get up on pain? We're not pawns in your game, Commander-in-Chief, honestly. If I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep, seriously. Do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis. People are dying while you line your pockets deep. Commander-in-Chief, how does it feel to still be able to breathe? We were taught when we were young, if we fight for what's right, there won't be justice for just some. Won't give up, stand our ground. We'll be in the streets while you're bunkering down. Best believe we'll still take a knee while you're Commander-in-Chief, honestly. If I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep, seriously. Do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis. People are dying while you line your pockets deep. Commander-in-Chief, how does it feel to still be able to breathe? While you're bunkering down, won't give up, stand our ground. We'll be in the streets while you're Commander-in-Chief, honestly. If I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep, seriously. Do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis. People are dying while you line your pockets deep.
About this. Have 1 million Americans die because of COVID-19. If President Dildo did his job in January, that would never really come because of half. It'd be the half a million Americans are not here because this fool did what he wanted to do. I don't know about y'all, but I'll be mad. I don't know about y'all, but I'll be going after him. He's lucky I was not a DA, because he'd be in trouble. He didn't do anything. It's a hoax. And then, see, this is the part that gets me mad. This is the part that gets me really angry. He called the virus the Chinese virus. He called the virus the Kung Flu. Unleashing a torrent of racial attacks on Asian Americans. Guess what? Every week, another Asian American gets attacked. All because of your foolishness. I go nonsense. You don't care. You don't care. Everybody can be mad. You sit there and unleash a racial storm, and then you leave. Come on, man. Really?
Yeah, Gary, 707 here.
I'm not happy with this.
Yeah, well,
I'm not happy.
I know. You haven't been happy for a long time. And, you know, adding to this, I note that former President Trump has weighed in rather heavily against MLB baseball moving the All-Star game out of Atlanta and the state of Georgia. And, of course, MLB made that decision based on the changes in voter registration that is perceived as
it is
voter
restrictions.
Right.
And it is.
And Trump weighs in, and it becomes ever more clear with his latest jibe on this, the racial animus that he harbors. And even you yourself, Gary, have said that he could have been one of the best presidents ever. But at every key point, he seems to have made the wrong decision, the more hateful decision, taking us down at every point a hateful road. And that doesn't continue, and he's doubling down now. Even now, you know, he could be chastened, he could be quiet like other presidents, kind of retire off to the sidelines. But here he doubles down, not with any grace, not with any sense of healing, but to continue to add fuel to the fire of racial animus.
What Donald J. Trump has done is what America has done for 200, 300, 400 years. Nothing new here. Nothing new here. But what Donald J. Trump has done is he has made it public. That's all. That's all. And James. And James. The United States of America need to have a come to Jesus moment. You know what come to Jesus moment I'm talking about?
Right.
You understand what come to Jesus moment? A come to Jesus moment says, okay, I did wrong. Okay. I'm going to apologize for your slavery. I'm going to apologize for your Jim Crowism. I'm going to apologize for you not getting the equal job and equal pay. I'm not going to do it.
Well, but not only is he not doing that, as I said, he's doubling down in the opposite direction. You know, it's one thing, you know, people can have differing opinions on reparations and all that. But here, you know, he's doubling down with this, you know, attacking. Yeah, well, attacking, you know, the decision by Major League Baseball to move the game out of Atlanta. And even, interestingly.
Let me ask you a question, sir. What is Bubba doing right now? What are they doing?
I can't imagine drinking Budweiser.
No. Well, I'm trying to get you to see it. Donald J. Trump says, do not go to baseball games. Right? Bubba, as their hero. Therefore, they are not going to games. Right? Correct?
Well, we can assume that. Again, I don't really know. I can't speak. You know, and the other thing I have a problem with, Gary, I'll just say this. You know, and I understand why and what you're saying when you use the phrase Bubba and Bobette, but that really reduces anyone to a caricature and a stereotype that diminishes them. In its own way, it is as harmful as you know, calling any group by some disparaging name.
What does America do to African Americans? What character do they portray African Americans?
But but my point is, if we're going to move beyond all this, we don't call people, you know, I mean, pick the name, you know, Uncle Remus or whatever, you know.
This is the thing, Art. This is the thing. When white people call black people names, it's okay. But when black people don't return the favor, they get upset. Why is that?
Well, again, Gary, this goes back to grade school and the playground. We start calling each other names, we're off to the races. You know, the whole thing needs to stop. Well, the whole thing needs to stop. You know, if you keep calling me names, I'm gonna come back at you, and we don't get anywhere.
All right. You have a president of the United States.
I agree with you.
Doing this.
I agree.
Hello?
Right, but the answer is not to come back with an equal amount of stupidity getting sucked into his game.
Wait, Arden.
Because again, let me say this: you call his people. Let me finish. You call his people Bubba and Bubette. They're sensitive too. They are wounded for their own reason. You may not agree with them. You may not agree with their wound, but they have their wound. They are oppressed in their own way. Yes, they have all the white privilege that they're entitled to, but they are an oppressed underclass. They're getting economically screwed as well with crappy jobs, exposed to toxins and things like this.
Okay.
But to call them Bubba and Bubette diminishes that, you know, and...
Wait. The African-American has been denied his humanity for over 400 years now.
I can't disagree with that.
Wait, let me finish. Those people who I call that name have never come close to that humanity. Okay? They can't go anywhere near that humanity.
Mm-hmm.
What? Come on now, you know the answer to this.
Well, I don't understand your question. What's your question?
No, the thing of it is, it's going right by the power and control and privilege. They're allowed to do this. Okay? They're allowed to say what they want to say and get away with it. Like Donald J. Trump. Somebody in Congress, somebody in the Senate says, hey, President, you can't do that. Nobody did that, did they? Huh?
No, many people have. I mean, the whole Democratic, the whole Nancy Pelosi, AOC, all of them have called out Donald Trump. It's not like his comments go without comment.
The Republican Party, did not go after Donald Trump.
That's true.
Why? Because it was their benefit. It was their benefit to
right.
do so.
Right.
Okay? So, you call black people SOBs. You call black people less than intelligent. You call black people dumber than dumb. That's okay. Because the president says so. Come on, man.
No, well, I'm not saying it's okay, Gary, but I'm saying by firing back and calling them Bubba and Bubette, you know, you can describe them equally well by saying, you know, pick another phrase, you know, the white, you know, red voting underclass, you know, gets them defined equally as well than as giving them a name, which is the, call it the redneck version of Sambo or something like that. My point is we don't get anywhere when we're swapping epithets.
All right, you have a president of the United States. A president of the United States who is the leader
right.
of the free world, who is the leader of the most powerful nation on the planet. Calling the COVID-19, what did he call it? He called it Kung Flu. He called it the Chinese virus.
Right, no. But my point, my point that I started with, Gary, is that just as he was detestable when he said those things, he is not backing off. Even now he's out of office, and he's continuing to assert these hateful points as he lambastes Major League Baseball for moving the All-Star game out of Atlanta. Again, adding fuel to the fire, adding fuel to the fire of racial animus. That's the point that I started with.
Somebody needs to step to him and say, okay, enough is enough. And the Republican Party, they are co-conspirators. They are cohorts. They're aid and betters. But they're going to do this. Somebody in the Republican Party needs to go up to him and say, okay, Mr. President, it's time for you to stop. It's time for you to back off. It's time for you to get your mouth and move on.
Yeah. Well, that pressure is not going to come from the Republican Party. If anywhere, it's going to come from the Democrats. We already see Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, going down and looking at the border crisis we have now, which is a crisis again, but taking photos rather than doing anything, just taking photos about the detention conditions and putting that blame on Joe Biden. Well, sure.
I thought I was about. Hey, we got Dr. Evil. Dr. Evil in the house?
Yes, sir.
Look. Republican Party, I'm being serious now. Republican Party's got to take responsibility for this. For the border crisis, for the Iran nuclear thing, the lack of the trade conflict in the world now, it all go back on Donald J. Trump.
Look, you got to remember something, Gary. They wrote his coattails to get in. Donald Trump wasn't even supposed to be considered. Handlers helped him get the way he had to get.
That was because
he started out in that primary by clowning out a lot of the competition that was in that field, including Cruz. And you got to also remember, for everybody that he knocked out the box with his insults or making fun of them, nobody opposed the guy. Actually, they were more trying to avoid him than deal with him straight up. And somebody saw that and said, you know what? Let's ride this pony and see how far it gets. And that's exactly what happened. And with that came a lot of the visceral nonsense that was coming from people who were mad at the fact that a black man was president, which I don't understand why, since there were six others before him, but I digress. The whole point was they went out of their way to say, this is not my country. We need to do something. I feel uncomfortable living under this premise. And all of the things that went with that. So when he got in, everybody felt entitled. Republicans felt entitled to say and do whatever the heck they wanted.
Because they did,
they had the unwilling support of the media because they had to back them by putting their concerns out there on Front Street. And they may not have done it through MSNBC as much as they did through Fox. Fox obviously was riding that horse for them, and CNN would get caught up in stuff. But they didn't care about who the messenger was. They knew who the messenger was. They cared more about, we are not going to deal with the human aspect of this. We're talking agendas. And as long as these guys are in power, we're going to ride with them. I mean, laws were violated. Things were changed that affected everybody, regardless of what political party you dealt with. And nobody cared because he had protected himself. He had a cocoon put around him. And frankly, for whatever money he may have, he's not that smart. But the people around him made him their front person, their puppet, whatever reason, whatever nickname or title you want to put on him. He was a figurehead. The real government that was running that stuff, they were about autocrats. They were autocrats. And all they wanted to do was keep this thing riding. If he had done 4 more years of this, we'd have been straight fascists. Folks would have had no human rights. And nobody's arguing the point that he was wrong. The point to be argued is the fact that nobody stood up. Nobody said, wait a minute, this ain't right. And if one had, maybe two would have, but nobody at any time said this ain't right. That was of the Republican ilk. And that's where the problem starts and ends.
I'm very disturbed in this country right now. I'm very disturbed because there's a trial going on in Minnesota right now. And one individual at jury can say
you gotta wonder
guilty and not guilty.
You're right.
You know, and see that I'm telling you now, if that happens, Mike, this summer is going to be a long, hot summer.
It's going to be longer and hotter than any summer prior to it. I don't disagree there. But let's remember, everything in this first week of prosecution is telling you, don't get around the fact that this guy was murdered.
Yep.
Everybody has now seen the tape. Or if,
yep.
And if they're not, they know that it exists. They saw how the
yep.
guy died. They saw the reaction of the first responders coming in and checking and
yep.
being alarmed that the guy was dead. The 9-year-old girl, who I think will end up needing therapy over the long haul
yep.
because
yep.
she saw the guy losing his life. You know, the martial artist who they tried to say was an angry black man, putting the defense lawyer in check because it was no such thing. And now you're going to have the police, the chief of police, who said everything about what was done was incorrect on the stand. Is he going to refute what he said before in an interview? I don't think so. If he does, obviously the police force will be on Front Street again, but he said everything right then and there. The guy was wrong. He was incorrect. Now, if he follows through with that on the stand, it will be intensely difficult for the...
Michael.
Yes.
And there was a train, a sergeant or a lieutenant that came on the stand yesterday. And they ask him, is this training procedure? And he said, no. And that training
yeah, he said no.
Right?
Right.
He said, do you do it in law? He said, no.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sorry. If your sergeant or lieutenant say this, there's something wrong with this picture.
They still want you to forget, G, and they still want to minimize. That's not going to change. I mean, that's why the defense lawyer is a defense lawyer. But having said and done what he's about to do, if he simply follows through with what was stated before, it's going to be incontrovertibly clear that they have no argument, no excuse. So they'll have to run through some technological mumbo-jumbo or psychobabble to justify the one person that you're talking about to sit there and say, yeah, he's not guilty. That's going to be more difficult as each of these things are happening. It's like peeling an artichoke. Every layer is going to tell you something, but ultimately they'll have to deal with the fact that those facts will come back around. And just as this trial started, it's going to end. He's dead. He's dead because somebody murdered his ass. That's the beginning and that's the end of it. It's not like they have to reinvent the wheel.
We got a lawyer. We got a lawyer. I want to see what the lawyer is going to say about this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Gary, I'm gonna not give an opinion here because, you know, the facts have all yet to be developed, and clearly on its face, it looks like a clear case of murder, and we've all seen the tape. But I have seen that tape characterized in different ways. I have seen it characterized as being torture. And I would submit, and you and I talk about this a lot, Gary, the importance of words. We need to save words like torture for when bodies are lynched and set on fire. We need to save words like torture for Auschwitz and Dr. Mengele and things like that and Guantanamo Bay. And waterboarding. The fact is, when someone is suffocated, albeit for 9 minutes, and certainly not pleasant, you know, to the recipient of that, that's not torture. It may well be murder.
Wait, whoa. No.
Let me finish my point. And that's why I refrain from giving an opinion here, Gary, because I know you're going to disagree with it. I'm just putting out some facts, and they may be alternative facts, and you may well disagree with them, and I understand why, and I do not disagree with your disagreement. Again, that's why I'm reluctant to put facts out here, because these things turn on, let me finish please, rather subtle interpretations of how a death may be caused. My fear is that There seems to be a case as a lawyer, and again, I'm trained to argue both sides, and some people say talk out of both sides of my mouth, et cetera, but that's how a lawyer is trained to think, to look at the facts objectively and subjectively from one side and from the other. Basically, we're trained, okay, what's the best argument that the opponent is advancing, and how do we turn that argument around? And that leads to alternate sets of facts, alternate sets of view, alternate sets of observations. And a case can be made, and this is my fear, quite frankly, that there is not going to be a conviction here. And Minneapolis and the country is going to blow up around that fact. And let me explain why and how there may not be a conviction here. And I understand, let me say, that you will disagree with my point of view, but I'm just going to put it out here. It seems that Floyd was under the influence of some substance. Testimony came out this week from his former girlfriend. Let me finish. Well, I'll tell you what it has to do with it. A person is under the influence of a substance, whether it's drugs or alcohol. That person has an underlying medical condition, which Floyd seems to have had, asthma or something like that. He's apprehended. He's a big man. They try to put him in the police car. He seems, however we get there, whether he resists or not, not to easily enter the police car, at which point he's taken down to the ground and restrained. Okay? He's restrained, certainly, past the point by which he's offering any resistance. But a lawyer can look at that and say, well, he offered some resistance. He did not enter the car for whatever reason. You know, he was afraid of the man. He was afraid of the power of the state. He was afraid of white supremacy, hegemony, all those things leading to him being reluctant, at least, to enter the police car, at which point the power of the state took him down to the ground and held him past the point of resistance. Now, you can look at that and say, well, yeah, you took him far past the point of resistance to the point that he was, in effect, suffocated. But again, those become the facts on which a case turns. And someone can look at that, and again, you'll disagree. Someone can look at that and say, well, you know, we needed to hold him down until there was no signs of resistance left. And they certainly did that. You take a person to the point of death, you've certainly minimized resistance. And then it becomes a sliding scale. Then it becomes a sliding scale. It becomes a sliding scale. How far do you go? And that's what the case is going to turn on. That's my lawyer's opinion. That's not my progressive opinion. That's not my sympathetic opinion. That's my lawyer's opinion. And my fear is that that's going to be the decision and things are going to blow up.
Let me ask you a question.
You know, Gary, people want to hear this, we need to have a dialogue because this is a time, a lot of times, cases are dismissed, like the situation in Florida where we found out that the person that used so-called force on a young man eating Skittles, because one juror said that, hey, I don't believe it. Whether we don't like it or not, we need to have a dialogue like this. So, I mean, come on, just be interested and honest about it. I totally believe it was torture. But then again, if you have somebody that's a lawyer that's going to tell the other side, we have to be adult enough to at least, you know, have the conversation. We can agree to disagree. But, you know, Gary, whether you like it or not, it's a damn good possibility that this guy, I'm hoping that he get at least manslaughter, because I think, and your lawyer can help me with this, I think that's the most easiest to prove. Am I right, sir? I don't know.
I would agree. You know, I would see this. I see this as a manslaughter case myself. And again, my fear is that there are people, many people, and I understand the reasons, who are going to say, you know, heck no, this is murder. He's a murderer. He should be convicted of murder. And if he's convicted of anything less than murder, things are going to blow up. As a lawyer, I look at this and I see it as a clear case of manslaughter. Mm-hmm. And whether it meets the definitions of murder becomes, to me, as a lawyer, less clear.
Now, manslaughter is a low version to prove. Am I right, sir? The threshold is lower to prove manslaughter than murder. Am I right about that?
Oh, yes, certainly. Yeah. Murder requires, murder requires malice. It often requires some forethought. Manslaughter implies, and I don't have the definition, the case definition, but basically a negligently causing death. And I think that's certainly what happened here.
You mean to tell me that this guy did not think about putting his knee down and that for that long?
I don't know what he thought. Those are the facts that have yet to be determined. I mean, that's the kind of, again, testimony and facts on which a case turns. Why did this cop, what was in the cop's mind? How do we, he's likely not to testify. He may testify. But how do we know what was in his mind? We're all just speculating. And he may testify and he say, you know, I had to hold this guy down, in my opinion, until there was no opposition being shown anymore. And it took me 9 minutes and some odd seconds to do that. And people can believe that or they can disbelieve it. But that may be his mind state. And his mind state turns on whether this is murder or manslaughter.
And real quick, that's why it's so hard to strike certain people off the jury, guys. Because, see, a lot of black folks, I tell you what, I ain't going to lie about it. I've been on jury duty 7 or 8 times, and every time I found a way to get off. I know I shouldn't have, but I didn't want no parts of it. So just think about this, Gary. I'm just asking you, Gary, this question. If a lot of black folks are like me out there saying, I don't want to be on the jury because, number one, it's a financial burden. Number two, I don't want the pressure of being on it. What's the likelihood of that cop getting off if a lot of people say, I don't want to be jury duty, who might be the sick and scared?
When this thing first came to trial, I said, he's not going to get guilty. He's not going to be guilty. I knew right from the start. It's like it was in 1992, 91, 92, in Simi Valley, with Rodney King.
So how do we change that? And Dr. Evil, how do we change that as far as people look like me serving jury duty? What do you think, Doc?
What's the question again?
How did we change the mindset as far as, is Mike still there or is Mike gone?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Oh, yeah. No, I was asking you, Mike, how do we change the mindset? Like I said, I didn't want no parts of jury duty. And I'm ashamed to say that, but in your community, in our community, Mike, how do we change the mindset so more of us are on those juries who maybe can give a fair shake?
I think this case will provide people with an opportunity to understand that if you're not part of the problem, you're part of the solution, and that's why you can't avoid jury duty. You have to be able to see it in front of you, and the reality that comes with deciding somebody's fate, because you have to clearly look at facts and deliberate, remind you that it could just as easily be you in that other position. And that's where this thing blows up to the level that it does. Now, it may very well prove through the course of all of this that they have enough meat in the sandwich to convict this guy on manslaughter. Because he's a cop, that's probably the best a lot of people can hope for, because many of them are jaded by the judicial process in the first place. There's a reason why that bitch has a blindfold on when she's standing out there in front of that courthouse. People don't get a fair shake. And many of them happen to be black, brown, et cetera, et cetera. But having said that, all this means is that the argument that has to be made will have to be so succinct that it has to generate the so-called reasonable doubt. I don't know.
Mike, and every time I told them that I had family to a police officer, they struck me off the jury. So you know, my cousin Pat and his Jim, his brother, both of them are police officers. Jim,
no, I know.
They're police professionals
in my family.
As I made that comment, they said, get his ass off the jury.
Yeah. But because of that, we come back to the reality that this case is different from a lot of other cases, because the live factor in seeing the procedures, that's different from what anybody's seen. The O.J. Simpson case, it turned out to be a circus, and the reason they let it go for as long as they did was because it created an institution. They made so much money off that case, and it's a shame to say it, but they made so much money off the case, it changed the whole paradigm for social interaction. You know, there were stations that were doing other things that all of a sudden shifted to this format of so-called court TV because of this case. Now, because of this case, everybody around the world gets to see this. This is not some celebrity thing with somebody driving down the highway in a dumb truck. Everybody is seeing and looking at the United States and saying, just how far are they really going to go? Will they get away with this crap? This is, the world is watching on steroids, because now you can be in Minsk or Jakarta or anywhere else. As long as you've got connected to the internet, the feed is everywhere. They're going to see if America will live up to the so-called noble words that are in those pieces of paper in Washington, D.C. It's going to be on Front Street big time. Nobody can ignore it, and the results will have worldwide ramifications, not just local. We're worried about a hot summer or a hotter summer? No. This will be a huge ball of fire around the world if somehow this asshole gets off for killing this black man.
The state of humanity in the United States is in trouble. It's been in trouble for years. Mm-hmm. But this trial is everything America did not want to see. Did not want to see this, because
pretty much
Donald J. Trump started this game. Now it's burned down half the force. Right? Now we had to call Calvin to put it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we put it out. What I think is happening is this is ignited a firestorm that America cannot put out. And what I mean is this: it is alienated Asians. It alienated Latinos and alienated blacks. So Donald J. Trump is standing all by himself with his little flag and his
there's truth to that, but you got to also remember the fact that everybody has access to this, gets to see it. This is different than armchair quarterbacks and stuff like that. You know, a game and the score, that's one thing. Somebody's life, how it was taken from them, and whatever redress is done to get it back,
humanity.
Or at least
humanity.
Get a balance. That's right. That's really in the balance. And everybody gets to see it. This is not, a decision was made and we stand by the decision. No matter what the decision is, we know there are going to be people that are not going to be comfortable with it. And based on which decision it is, it just questions the level of comfort. Everybody's going to see this. And because everybody's going to see it, everybody will have their own opinion about what it's like to live in this country and how important or unimportant the lifespan of a black man is.
Well, as an African-American, I'm going to be very honest. In 1969,
mm-hmm.
my first year of high school,
yep.
Dr. King had just been killed.
Yeah.
Robert Kennedy had just been killed.
Mm-hmm.
Civil Rights Bill had passed. The Education Bill had been passed.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, 2020, and the life of a black African-American man is still in jeopardy. Still, when I walk out that door in the morning, I might not come back. Not because I broke the law.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I acted stupid. But because some officer of the law tried to measure me day or that night or that hour.
Right.
If I am in a correct mood, I will live. But if I am in an argumentative mood, I can be shot dead by an officer.
Yeah.
And he knows how to do it because he has a badge.
Mm-hmm.
The white men know how to think about that. We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the difference here.
Yeah, that is the difference. But see, because that is the difference, that's also going to mean everybody who's watching this, everybody who's paying attention to the dialogue and how both sides are arguing, they can say straight up, it will either confirm what they already know, it will question what they thought they knew, or it will lay waste to any credibility that our justice system has for any citizen in this country who happens to be black, brown, or what have you.
You know what's amazing? You know what's amazing about all this?
What?
In America, did not respond until nothing really happens bad, and they respond. What I mean is this. They didn't do jack until '68 and things were burning down all over the country. They didn't do jack again until after Rodney King and the Rodney King riots in '96.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are, 2021. Are you going to see it burn down again? Sometimes you have to make common sense and say, okay, we have a problem here. Let's deal with this. You don't wait till Newark. Compton, Chicago, Southside is burning up, and they say, okay, now we're going to do something. Well, do right now.
That's right.
Come on,
man. Well, you know, I'm sure nobody wanted to wake up thinking that this was going to be the day that you were going to die, because we're all going to die. How you die is the difference. Nobody wants to die behind some bullshit. You know,
right.
Nobody wants to be hit by a car. Nobody wants to be hit by a car or fall off a roof or, you know, have the elevator fall on you or some shit. Everybody wants to try to get around their business and live their life as possible, as best as possible. But when you have something intervene, like police, and let's understand, George Floyd didn't come in with a machine gun and say, give me all your cigarettes, or empty the drawer out or anything like that. This was not with a violent bent or a violent intent. This deteriorated from the point where he laid a fake $20 bill on the table. Now, I'm saying this from relating my own experiences here in New Jersey. If I lay down a fake bill, however it may come by, if I lay down a fake bill, somebody here is going to tell me, Mike, this bill's no good. And I'm like, what? Why? And they'll show me. They'll keep the bill, and they'll say, you know, you got another bill? You know, and you either had another bill or you shit out of luck and you got to go somewhere else or deal with another alternative. None of that. None of that would constitute taking somebody out because of a bad bill. And we have to remember that. We have to rewind to the beginning and make everybody understand this is how it started. There's no angry black man. If he was angry about anything, it was the fact that he had a fake $20 bill. At least that's where the source of my anger would be. So, and I don't pretend to be a lawyer.
I want to know who gave it to me.
Well, like I said, I ain't no lawyer, but I'm simply saying this. Prosecution knows what the fuck is up. The guy's dead. How did he die? You know, he got choked to death by a punk cop who had the situation in control and decided to take it to another level. Let's remember
that.
Hey,
Mike,
I
got a question for you, Mike, real quick. The silver bullet in all this is we have a new administration. We have a new Justice Department, the new DOJ. Now, that tells me when Rodney King, in that case, didn't get justice, didn't the federal government step in on him?
Yeah.
That's right.
It began a federal case.
So trust and believe, gentlemen, this ain't over with by a long shot.
Oh, no.
That's my point. If the federal government come in there and they come with this civil rights division we got right now, this assassin, and I say again, Gary, it was torture. You know, as I say, your friend's lawyer, we just agree, disagree, but my issue is this. We will now see the true power of the Department of Justice. Now, if they do like they're supposed to, they can bring heat in the heaven, and hopefully they have another Department of Justice that goes really into a dissent decree when it comes to that department of the ill-gotten gains they've done, and the Dick Dastardly deeds they've done. We got at least 3 years with this Department of Justice to clean up a whole lot of what's been going on. It's just my thoughts. I'll just throw that in the pot.
Well, I think they are so laser focused on Donald J. Trump right now that they could be blindsided by this thing.
Come on, Gary, they can multitask. Lawyers multitask. Come on now, you can say and tell me they can't go up to Trump and do this too? Come on now.
I agree with you. They can multitask.
Hey, Gary, look how much you multitask. And if I know a brilliant person, you can multitask. I damn sure think the government can. Come on now. You know what I'm saying, bro? Come on now. They can multitask. Our tax dollars are paying for them to go and do multiple things, and I'm sure they can handle it, including going after Russia with the hack job they did when they went into cyber and God knows how many billions of dollars they stole. So they say they went in and did some cyber attack under the previous administration. We don't know how much damage they've done with his help.
Have you all noticed the complete silence on the Biden case, quiet as gun.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, I'm glad you brought that up.
But you know, Gary, there's a reason why he has to be quiet, at least regarding this, because of the scope of how far this goes. Now, when the Central Park Five were accused of the shit they did and Donald Trump went out of his way to try to have those boys executed.
At no time
did any journalist, and I say journalist, I can say that because I am one, I've been one for over 30-odd years, no journalist offered balance. Not even balance, but no journalist offered clarity, because when that kid, Curry Wise, wrote in his or whatever deposition that they pulled up the jogger skirt, none of these cats checked them on it and said, wait a minute, skirt, come on now. They knew that the shit was under duress. All they wanted was some black behinds behind bars so they could see like they had done something to make the city feel safer about the black evil menace that was roaming the cities and in the parks and all that. That was done deliberately. And Jimmy Breslin and Pete Hamill and all these other punk motherfuckers who solely consider themselves guardians of the spoken word and written word, they ain't shit. And I mean that without having to dollop any extra conviction. They knew. And nobody bothered to correct it or clean it up. If it hadn't been for some kid in jail saying that he did it, them boys would still be in jail. So as far as I'm concerned, this is nothing new. People have to stay on top of this stuff. People have to demand that folks be treated fairly. If somebody does something, yeah, punish their ass to the fullest extent of the law. But that should be, if anybody does anything, punish them to the full extent of the law. And we don't have that in this country.
No, we don't. We really don't. Man, you can go 80 years in secret.
Mm-hmm.
Like this lady who wrote a book about it, got money off of it. And Emmett Till is still dead. This lady gave fame and money off of a lie.
That sure did.
Now she's 80 years old. Oh, I'm sorry.
She's 84 years old. She's 84 years old. And in a sidebar to what you just said, the people that murdered Emmett Till were paid $75 by Look Magazine to tell how they killed this kid. You know? And then they would say, well, you know, double jeopardy, we can't do anything. Oh, fuck that. They killed a human being, and they got paid for it. They got paid to tell everybody how they did it because nobody could prosecute them. That's evil.
Well, America once again is showing its evil side. They did try.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
America, this is the thing. I was growing up. My mom and dad taught me a lesson. My mom and dad said, son, you do wrong, you're going to pay for it. That's what I was told when I was 8, 9 years old. And they didn't care how I was disabled today. You do the wrong, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're in a wheelchair or not, you're going to pay for it. Now, America seems to pick and choose whatever they feel like. And this is one of those pick and choose moments. Now, I want to see if they pick the right way. We're going to find out.
Yeah, but Gary, let me say this. When you say pick the right way, and you talked earlier about humanity, let me finish. Humanity, when you're looking at the elements of the crime, you can take this whether it's a murder charge or speeding on the freeway. The conviction, the proof, has to fit the elements of the crime, regardless of how you feel about it. You know, we may feel we want to drive 70 miles an hour on the freeway. Well, the limit is 65, and we either were driving 65 or not. Those are factual questions. In similar fashion here, if it turns out that the elements of the crime that, in terms of proof, is that Chauvin had not the mental state, because the mental state is one of the elements of the crime, not the mental state to kill, that he had no malice beyond restraining an individual. And if that you go through the elements of the crime, you do it like actually in a jury, it's a check mark. You know, have they proven this? Have they proven that? Simple fact, was he there? Yes, well, we can check that box off. And you continue to move through these various elements of the crime, regardless of how you feel. And you just go through and check those boxes. And if the total comes out in a way that you don't prefer or don't like, you're still kind of stuck with that decision. Does that show the negative heart of America as you kind of portray it?
Yeah,
if,
it does.
If the checklist doesn't check out.
Yeah, it does, because it's the injury.
Okay, but are we going to convict Chauvin for 400 years of history or what he did on one afternoon?
No. What Derrick Chauvin did, and he had a priority to stop him, and he did not stop him. This is the art. Once that guy was handcuffed and down, he was no longer a threat.
Well, we don't know that, because people are handcuffed and down, and they continue to kick. They continue to resist. Right. It happens all the time. We know that. I mean, watch cops on television. You see that all the time.
But while in this video, he was not doing that.
Right. No, and then again, that will be a factual question. Why did they continue to kneel on him beyond the time when he seems not to have been offering any resistance? That's a factual question, a factual determination that will turn on the results of the case. That's one of the checklist points.
Let me ask you a question, bro. If this guy was 6'1" and a white guy 205, would they do the same thing?
How tall was George Floyd?
6'1".
Okay.
One.
I would say yes. Conceivably, yes. I mean, I can tell you that in your town, El Cerrito, a couple of Christmases ago, I was pulled over and stopped because I have a headlight out. And the officer asked me if I had been drinking. He asked me to do what's called a horizontal gaze nystagmus test, where they put a pen, or in this case a finger, in front of your eye.
And so you say,
but it all turns on the facts. And I told the officer, I said, let me finish. I'm not going to take that test because you're administering it to me erroneously. Even me, with all my supposed privilege, okay, pal, out of the car. Right? And, they ran me through the drill. Now, the critical fact here is, one, I was cooperative, and two, I was not intoxicated. And, you know, even though I did have a drink, I was not intoxicated. Knowing everything that I know, and at the time I was basically doing DUI law defense, everything I knew, I was extremely nervous going through that thing. And no, they did not beat me down, but I did not get a free pass. And I think if white people resist officers, they will, you know, they do not get free passes. It doesn't happen. Now, do they get a beat down the same way as a black person does? Of course, the grand scheme of things, probably not. But they do not get free passes. That simply doesn't happen. Just as I did not get a free pass, I had to run through the drill and pass the drill and then be let go.
I've been a Berkeley for 30 years, lived in Berkeley for 30 years.
Uh-huh.
I have been stopped 3 times in Berkeley. Right.
Well, that's a pretty good average. It's not a bad average.
Right, yeah, it's okay, but all 3 times, they had the same question. Are you drunk? Can you speak clear again? If you're trained well and you know disability, you would ask these kind of questions. But because guys have been in there, they've been in there, and what they knew this.
Right.
So I had to explain to this officer, sir, I have cerebral palsy. This is the way
right.
I normally speak. This
right.
is the way I normally move.
Right.
This is the way my body reacts.
Right. And then they let you go, right?
After a check.
Yeah, but again, Gary, that's what happens. Police are trained, this is one of the phrases we use, to immediately confirm and dispel suspicion. So you see a person who is talking unclearly, let me finish, or moving with some difficulty. A police will, even if they're trained to protect and serve, they will look at that person and go, is that person experiencing some difficulty? Should I help that person? Or is that person intoxicated? Let me confirm and dispel suspicion. Let me stop that individual, and it may take 3 to 10 minutes. Okay, I understand you have cerebral palsy. Thank you very much. Move on.
All right. This happens to people with cerebral palsy way too much.
Well, yeah.
Way,
but again,
way too much.
I would agree with you.
I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about Leroy Moore.
Right.
I'm talking about Moira Brown. I'm talking about Sylvia Wynn. All these people been stopped by the police. Oakland police, Elsinore police, and Berkeley. Time and time again. Now, they do not, and this is very interesting, they do not detain people, white males, when they're a policy. I'm thinking, wait a minute, in the day to these, we got the same movement, why are you detaining them?
Yeah. Let me ask you this. How many white people with cerebral palsy do you hang out with?
Okay.
Well, see, there you go. Already the survey is balanced because is unbalanced because you are hanging with your cerebral palsy brothers and sisters who are black. You know, the same thing may be happening. We don't know. The same thing may be happening to white people with CP. But you're not talking to them, so you don't get their story. See, but my point is every story turns on its facts, and you have to look at the facts, you know, and that's what it comes down to. Separate from humanity, separate from emotion, looking at the facts.
All right. It is annoying.
I understand that.
Annoying.
Yeah.
Okay. Michael, you got to use this experience. Okay. I'm returning a shopping cart. I'm taking it. Returning it to the store.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this police officer, I can see him in the corner of my eye. I can see him coming.
Mm-hmm.
In his sedan. I get about 10 feet from the door. Officer says, where are you going with the shopping cart?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, really? You're asking me this question? And the door is right there? I'm returning the shopping cart to the store. Right? Now, this is going to go sideways any second. If I got attitude, this is going off the rails.
Right, but again, Gary, I was with you that afternoon. And I remembered when you came back to your house that afternoon, you had commented on, you thought it was funny. You thought it was the absurdity of this cop asking you a question, you know, what are you doing with a shopping cart? And we laughed at the point because you have to realize, you know, again, you're in a very small, quiet town, El Cerrito, not much going on. It's kind of unusual, okay? To see a guy in a wheelchair pushing a cart to the grocery store. And
I
the cop,
I, I, I,
And that was a curious fact. And the cop asked you, and again, you were respectful. He did not come over and beat you down just because he could. He was probably perplexed. He was probably confused. And everything went away. And when you came back, you told the story with humor. You thought it was funny. We were laughing at the cop, at the absurdity of his position. Only later did you perceive that as harassment.
You have to understand, that was a possible threat. Right? Because he could do that.
Right.
Right. That possible threat is always there.
Right.
And that should not be in the United States. It should not be that way. But it is. That's got to be taught in their training. You cannot do this to people.
But, Gary, what did he do that was offensive? He saw an unusual event.
Right.
He briefly investigated and let you go. He confirmed and dispelled suspicion. There was no suspicion. He was satisfied. He moved on. Perhaps he looked at you, where are you going? You might have been needy. You might have been needy of assistance to get that cart back to the store, in which case he might have helped you. But you basically answered his question. I'm taking it back to the store. Everything's good. And he said, fine, everything's good. Have a nice day, and moved on.
But you don't understand the perception of the threat. I don't have a gun. I don't have a rifle or any offensive weapons.
Right.
So you have a gun. You have the authority of the law behind you, and you do this.
I mean, we did what? He investigated. He asked a question. I'll give you another example. I'm parked on my street. I live out in the country. I live at the end of a half-mile country road. And I'm parked on my road one night with the radio on, reading a book, watching the sun go down. The sheriff's vehicle comes up on my street, parks in front of me, right in front of me. I go, okay, what's this? Because we got rednecks out here, too. And I go, okay, who's this SUV stopping in front of me, and for what reason? And I get out of my car, and oops, it's the sheriff. And he goes, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm reading a book, listening to the radio, and watching the sun go down, which immediately brands me as kind of some tree-hugging hippie fool or something, right? And I go, look, I live at the end of the street. He goes, what street? I go, the street that you're on. He goes, Gilchrist? I said, no, Gilchrist is the turn at the corner. You're on Woodworth. And I live at 3661 Woodworth. Right? And he looks at me and is like, you know, and I go, do you want to see my license? And usually, again, as a lawyer, this is where cases begin, where people say, what's your probable cause to ask for my license? I've handled hundreds of cases that begin with, what was the PC, the probable cause, to ask for the license? With this guy, I completely flipped the script. I offered him my license. He did not know how to deal with that. Because he's trained to deal with people who don't want to give you the license in the first place. And I handed him my license because I didn't want to deal with his silliness. You know, I'm on my street, Woodworth. You don't even know where you are, officer. You think you're on Gilchrist. Here's my license. Run me. See who I am. And the look of perplexity on his face was remarkable because it flipped the script. And again, yes, he had a gun. He could have shot me for being some wise-ass, you know, white hippie, mouthing off, thinking I'm a smart-ass, giving him my license, jumping out of the game. But it didn't happen. Like with that cop and you in the shopping cart, it didn't happen. Because you were respectful, because you were not loaded, because you were not handcuffed and resisting in the first place.
Well, that police officer, I met him again at the Safeway store.
Uh-huh.
I said, why did you do that?
Right.
He said, I thought you were taking the car away from the store. I'm like, what? He thought I was taking the car away from the door.
Well, that was the answer, right?
I'm going
through
the door. I'm going through the door.
And you clarified that. Did you explain to him you were going to the store?
My direction of my wheelchair was in the direction of the door.
Okay, so what was the next sentence in your engagement with him at the Safeway? Did the conversation continue?
No, I ended it.
Well, that was his answer.
But then again, to me, it showed me the inconsistencies of interrogations. It's inconsistent.
Yeah, but again, you got to remember that these people are cops because they're not rocket scientists. They are not brain surgeons. They are not the brightest lights in the world. And that's what we have to deal with.
That's true. All right, gentlemen. I'm gonna get a little bit of sports here again.
I got some sports questions, if I may. Can I get in quickly with some sports questions?
All right, go ahead.
Okay, I want to talk about, we talked about this a little bit of this week by email, the beatdown last night by the Toronto Raptors on the Golden State Warriors, which was the biggest gap, almost 60 points, I think, biggest gap in a victory this year. Mm-hmm. None of the – Curry wasn't starting, Green
nope.
wasn't starting. I think
nope.
Curry still has a tailbone issue, and Green
yeah.
may have some injury too.
He
and separately
still yeah.
yeah. Separately, you had talked about resting the Dubs and waiting next year to try to make a playoff run. And you were suggesting, and I question this, you thought that it was important that if a team like the Dubs can get into the playoffs, it's important to give their younger players the experience of at least being in the playoffs, even if they get bounced out at an early time.
Yep. I don't believe that. Look, and this is a classical case of it. Mark Jackson took the Golden State Warriors from nomads to playoff contenders.
Right.
Mark Jackson had a group of young men, just like it is right now. That playoff experience during the Mark Jackson years prepared them for Steve Kerr years. It got them ready, and when Steve Kerr came on board, they're ready to go.
Yeah. Let me ask you this: What is it about just being in the playoffs? What is it about that experience? Are you sniffing the air at a higher level? What is it that makes you playoff seasoned?
No,
my thing is the pressure.
Well, yeah, my thing also is the game. The game is speeded up. When you go to playoffs, the game is speeded up. Everything is speeded up. What about Randy?
As I say again, the pressure. I mean, every stop you do is pressure. Every time the turnover, the pressure. Look at the University of South Carolina Lady Gamecocks. They had the game in their hands. And you cannot tell me in the back of their mind, oh, I can't miss this. We got one chance to win this game. We're going to play the next championship. And they did not follow through like they should have.
Yep.
You know, I guarantee you, they took that shot. 10 towns out of 9, they'd have made it. But you think about the pressure on you. You know, and that's just human nature. But real quick, Gat, I want to get to the Supreme Court ruling, and that's going to be in June with the NCAA. Now, the NCAA is the criminal organization that it is. There's no excuse for them to treat the women like they did. And for Gino to kind of not be at the forefront, I said, God bless Don Staley. God bless Muffin McGraw. And the young ladies on social media that went after these billion-dollar gangsters in the NCAA that treat these women disrespectful and really disrespectful to Arizona. And they want to sit up here and get upset with the Arizona coach when she gave the double bird. Damn it, I'm proud she did it, and I support her 100%. And I'm glad because when the NCAA only put up three teams, they're in the Final Four, how in the ham pants can you have a blunder like that? I mean, that's in confidence to the highest. And these guys are sitting on their ivory towers making all this money, and they got the dash and sit back and not have somebody go through that. Come on, man. That is ridiculous. And the NCAA is a criminal organization. And like the old ball coach said back in the day, you know what, boys? We don't need the NCAA. We can get our own group. We can go ahead and go with the Big Five, and we don't need y'all. Also, the NCAA is going to tighten their ass right now because they know that they've been stealing for the longest time. And one person and the judge, Supreme Court, had nerve to say, well, you know what? It makes me happy to see people playing the sport and not getting paid. What? That's slavery last time I checked.
Yeah. Well, at the end, the NCAA is going through some major changes. I believe you're seeing the depth of the NCAA right now. This is the beginning of the end. They've been trying
it just depends on the license, the uniform money they get and the license. Card. They keep having these games come up, and Lord, every time you look with the betting is going through the roof. I mean, they bet on golf, tennis, anything. They don't care what it is. They can bet on alligator rest. I mean, it's ridiculous. This betting is going on. And who's getting rich off of that? Once again, corporate America and the conservative mindset. They won't talk about that. They won't talk about all these players. Oh, you had a cheeseburger. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This man making $15 million a year. But yet the owners of the NCAA making billions of dollars. Look at that TV contract. $1.7 billion more than what the football people got. But we put the tip and we act U.S. What the hell with it?
Well, it's interesting how they changed the format of the NCAA this year. Usually, it's Saturday, Sunday, and they moved. What they did was they added a day in both of the quarterfinals and finals. They added a day where you have a rest day. See, the women are off today, and they play tomorrow, which back in the old days, you never did that. You had back-to-back. So, and the men play tonight, and they have an off day tomorrow. So they play Monday night. So they changed the whole format now.
Isn't it funny that the ladies got paid on each Sunday? Isn't that kind of interesting?
Yeah.
But, you know, Mother's Day, all of the race car drivers never made for Mother's Day or holiday. It's kind of interesting.
That's so true. Dr. E was quiet over there.
No, I'm just paying attention.
Dr. E was quiet. I can't take this anymore.
Yeah,
I can't handle
that.
That's like Jerry Jones with a concert.
Michael, what to you is the difference of playoff experience?
Well, nothing replaces getting time on the court. How a team regulates their time means a lot. I can remember from watching the Knicks back in the day of how they made sure all the players, not just the starters, but the shock troops, got their significant minutes so they were able to deal with certain situations and let that manifest into where they showed resolve in the postseason. And I think that's true with any team. When my Eagles won the Super Bowl, they showed their mettle because of their incredible depth. When people went out, other people came in and performed better than the level of the player that they replaced. So in team sports, I think that's consistent regardless of sport. Those things are a microcosm of what the coach does and what the front office does with the people they play. And nothing replaces chemistry. If there are people who are desirous to succeed by merging as one through the process, it minimizes whatever drama they have to deal with when they hit adversity. So playoff teams develop in sync with the chemistry that they develop. And that doesn't mean that a rookie team can't have chemistry. The Vegas Golden Knights are a classic example
of a team
that did not have experience at all. They were brand new. And ever since they've been in the business here, the Vegas Knights have shown that they are a formidable team and organization because their talent man at the top, Gerard Gallant,
picked a collection of people and had continued to keep making selections. When somebody got lost on the front line, they put in a Max Pacioretty, who really didn't have that great a reputation. They started playing better. And the being able to plug people in and plug people back in, that's also part of what an overall chemistry is. So Vegas has a pedigree, and I don't think I've ever seen it in organized sports at any level where a team consistently, from the time they start out, says, we have an expectant level of excellence, and this is why we do what we do. And if you look at the records to back the facts up, Vegas rarely gets shut out. Vegas rarely gets blown up. You're never going to see Vegas lose by 5 goals to somebody unless it's an aberration. So clearly they have a mentality that fits with the people that they have.
And I'd go back to your Warriors question, is that when Steve Kerr became the coach of the Warriors, he evaluated each one of the players, and the key to all the key was Iguodala.
Right.
And that skinny forward, real skinny guy, the forward, before KD, what was his name? Anyway, those two guys were the key.
Oh, Harrison Barnes?
No. Oh, what is his name? He's going to drive me crazy now. But
you know we all look alike, G.
He came in second quarter, the third quarter of the game, both games. A goatee, and I can see his face. I can't see his name. Anyway, those two guys, were the key to the Warriors winning. Because they came in and this it was no difference. I mean, Iguodala was awesome when he came in.
Right. Well, he got the MVP.
Cool.
I got to find this guy's name now.
But you know what, G, regardless of whether it's your Warriors or not, team sports really are about, from the first man to the last man, everybody believes they're part of the team. You know, you don't have a team unless everybody's there. You may find out in the heat of battle whether folks are ready, because if a significant person gets hurt, obviously that changes the forecast for what they want to do overall. But if a team is able to plug and grind their way through and still make it to the postseason, you know, that's like spaghetti sauce sitting in the refrigerator for an extra couple of days. It's going to have more flavor. And that's why it's important to not dismiss the chemistry factor. That is so integral to making sure a team succeeds long term. You saw it with your A's. You saw it with your A's in the 70s. Those boys was fighting with each other. They used to try to whip each other's ass. But when they got out on the field, well, let's go whip the opposition's ass. So they understood that.
But, Mike, why does that step up in the postseason?
It steps up in the postseason because matchups are more pronounced. If we find out that, say, a certain player is a better defender than other players on the team, their role becomes more prominent. If somebody, because we know these are all individual matchups, we're talking individual matchups in a team environment. If a coach is saying, I got to move Gary over to small forward because he ran over this guy last time with his wheelchair, and he's afraid of going in the lane again. You know, so it's on his mind. We look at those things and make sure that the individual matchups are not dismissed. That's what coaches are for. They're supposed to be sharp now.
I got it. I got it.
Yeah.
John Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
It's John Livingston. His name is John Livingston.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yes, ultimately, though, Reggie, Art, everybody, that's the whole issue. You look at an individual matchup then, because then you see, if one guy can hurt me, how can they hurt me? If this person can hurt me, who do we put on their ass to defend? And these things break down various aspects from the big men to the forwards to the point guards, whatever else. All of that's in the mix.
Especially in basketball, if you know one person can kill you, but the other help you, you can shut him down. Let that person shoot all day. As long as you take care of another person, you got a better chance of winning.
Yeah.
Except for Mr. Man of Kansas City. He's the only person I think that shot his pins in that championship. That was the one exception.
So the answer quickly is the greater knowledge that you learn about each other in the regular season, and then you can amp that up into the postseason.
That goes very much into it. Yes, that's a big contributing factor, no doubt.
I like to give a shout out to a father and son team who will be in the Final Four tonight. Houston coach Alvin Brooks II will go against his son, Alvin Brooks III.
You know the dad's 2-0 against the sons, G. You know that, right? But if the son get him today, I think it'll even up. Yeah, Dad, but I got your ass in the Final Four, Dad. What you got to say? I got your ass. See? Because the Bugs in the draw with him on Bugs Bunny. See? I got you, Dad. See?
It's great. It's good to see the Bowers on team tonight. It's going to be fun to watch.
Houston got the athletes, but unfortunately, Baylor got the experience. So I want Houston to win because our brother coaches. But we'll see how Baylor do. Shout out to Juwan Howard, coach of the year.
Yeah.
I guess he can recruit.
I think Juwan Howard will do very well because the recruit, he got number one recruiting draft that year.
He didn't even have his best player playing. Best player. But Gary, real quick, I got to say this, man. God bless John Thompson, the ancestor. I used to love to have him sit down on the radio and give his description of the game. And God, this is the first time he's not going to be there, you know. And unfortunately, John Thompson really likes you. He said, "Where's that MF doing?" Did anybody check? He said, "John Thompson called you MF." That means he likes you. That's a fact. If you ever see guys snicker and laugh by John Thompson and say, "I can't stay on the radio," that's what it was. He called MF. "How's that MF doing?" He even called Bobby Knight at MF one time. Bobby Knight said, "Yeah, I'm doing fine, MF."
Hey, Reggie. Reggie, since you brought that up, let me throw into the pot here a little tidbit. Dikembe Mutombo's son has said that he is going to go to Georgetown because of the pedigree. And I don't know how tall he is, but if he's anything like his pops, Georgetown fans can expect to see another finger waving every time a shot is blocked. So
they can't do that no more than college basketball. Mike.
I know, but kudos not just to Georgetown.
But he
kudos
can make
not just
with
Georgetown's
his
program. But let me say this, because we got to give kudos not just to Georgetown's program, but to Patrick Ewing, who got them into the tournament by winning the Big East tournament. He beat a lot of teams that he wasn't supposed to beat. Patrick always felt he could coach, and I don't think everybody agreed with him, because for all the good work he put in with the Knicks, he didn't even get a sniff towards coaching, which I thought was unfair. And now that he is there, he's got another potential big man coming to him, and I hope that Georgetown becomes the empire once again and gets back to that Hoyer paranoia.
But you know, Mike, they use the old bullshit. Well, you know he doesn't interview well. Bullshit. This man has a high basketball IQ, and I hate when people want to use that bullshit excuse. He doesn't interview well. I get sick of that.
Yeah.
Hey, look, if you want to interview, look at the Ryan brothers in the NFL. How in the hell did they get a job? Especially a head coaching job. Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. Done.
All right.
Yes, sir. The Big Bang Tournament is going to continue. We're going to have some Latin soul in the mix as Mr. Joe Batan will enter the fray. This is the first time we've had a chance to put him out there. There will be a wild card, so there's some good stuff to look forward to. Everybody pay attention, but in all seriousness, it's important to have balance. And we know there's a lot of drama going on out there. The fact that we can provide a little balance with a little music will help. And ultimately, everybody needs help. How we go about asking for that help or providing that help, that's on us. We try to do it by making sure that through the universal language of music, everybody can at least feel something, and you can kick back and enjoy some great music listening to us at 9 p.m. Eastern. At 7, we start off with Gary in the Music Box. So, everybody, pull up to the bumper, have something to sip on, enjoy some music, enjoy spring, and be safe out there.
And, Mike, real quick, once again, they're stealing your stuff. Y'all know who the big-time band battle band will be tomorrow. Earth, Wind & Fire against the Isley Brothers. I said, they still in Gary and Mike's stuff already. You guys been at that battle. I tell you, man, they always stealing your stuff, man. And this,
you know.
My impression of Gary, my impression of Gary, they're stealing that stuff, man. They're stealing that stuff.
That's right.
So that's my final thought right there. They're stealing your stuff.
Okay. Well, tomorrow we got Ron Wiley and Levi Jones.
Yeah. Now we talking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we get ready for that.
Yes,
indeed. Get on Tuesday night. We're gonna do Tuesday night. We gotta get another matchup for Tuesday night. We're gonna see what it is.
Yeah.
We gotta keep it going. Thank you, Mike, for the great idea. I believe this is the best idea we had in a long time.
Well, I tell you, this is some good stuff that's been going on. People are definitely digging the music. We got response from Asia, Europe, South America. Folks are really chiming in. So just kick back. When you hear what you hear, voice your choice. Enjoy life, and we shall carry on.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's good.
Keep up the good work, guys. Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get D.M.E. Moore. D.M.E. Moore, take us out.
All right.
With our great song, Commander-in-Chief.
Were you ever taught when you were young? If you mess with things selfishly, they're bound to come undone. I'm not the only one that's been affected and resented. Every story is fun, and I'm a lucky one. 'Cause there are people worse off that have suffered enough. Haven't they suffered enough? But you can't get enough of shutting down systems for personal gain, fighting fires with liars and praying for rain. Do you get up on pain? We're not pawns in your game. Commander-in-chief, honestly, if I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep. Seriously, do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis, people are dying.
you line your pockets deep, Commander-in-Chief. How does it feel to still be able to breathe? We were taught when we were young, if we fight for what's right, there won't be justice for just some. Won't give up, stand our ground. We'll be in the streets while you're bunkering down. Loud and proud, best believe, we'll still take a knee while you're Commander-in-Chief. Honestly, if I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep. Seriously, do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis, people are dying while you line your pockets deep. Commander-in-Chief, how does it feel to still be able to breathe? Bunkering down.